Blog Talk Radio.
Microplastics, their impact on the environment, and why we should care. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. Stay tuned. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, Rock family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join the conversation, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You'll be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that point. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Sister Rhiannon Denby. Peace, Sister Rhiannon. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you for being with us tonight. Sister Rhiannon, will you please introduce yourself to the family?
Yeah. Hey, y'all. My name is Rhiannon Wallace Denby, and I am currently an undergraduate student studying ecology, evolutionary, and organismal biology. I specialize in microplastic research, and I have a double minor in Arabic and African and African American studies.
Okay. Scary. So tell us what sparked your interest in microplastics?
It kind of happened by chance. I wanted to get into doing research up at my university, and I was accepted into the aquatic ecology lab there, and a microplastic project was already being done or had been done in the past, and so my research mentor told me all about it and kind of like what microplastics were, what the previous project was, and if I'd be interested in like finishing the project or like creating something new. And that's kind of what sparked my interest in microplastics, and it's kind of just taken off from there.
And how long have you been in that field?
Honestly, since 2018, which is kind of wild to think about. I didn't realize it had been that long. So.
Yeah, okay. That sounds very interesting. So you go ahead now and tell us about microplastics, what they do to the environment, and why we should care. Because people, you know, we might not even have heard of microplastics, and if we did, it was in passing. So we really don't have much information on the subject.
Right, yeah. Even I didn't have information on microplastics because, you know, the information that is put out to us is about, like, bigger plastics, like water bottles and things like that. And obviously those are very bad for the environment, but what we're missing the scope of is microplastics and their impact. And kind of why I wanted to talk about that and present on it, because it's like, you know, if we are fighting for equity and things, we have to have a planet to live on to fight for that equity. So it's really important that we care about our environment too, because it's important that we take care of the place that we're living on. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what microplastics are. So if you've ever used like a beauty care product with microbeads, you know, there's an early 2000s huge craze with microbeads where they were like in your antibacterial hand soaps or in toothpaste or in like facial cleansers and stuff like that. If you've ever used something like that, then chances are you are familiar with what microplastics are. Micro trip you up. While microplastics are small in nature, a majority of microplastics can be seen with the naked eye. And so what we typically define microplastics as in our field is that they are particles typically smaller than 5 millimeters. And so for reference, a pea is about 10 millimeters in size. So we're working with something that's a little bit smaller than a pea.
Okay.
And so we can kind of have like a base understanding of what microplastics are. And so the way that we break down what microplastics are, or like what the sources of microplastics are into two main categories. You have your primary microplastics, which are produced as such. So like think about resin pellets, raw materials for plastic products. These are your primary sources. Or like additives for personal care products, shower gels, peels, all of that. Our secondary microplastics are what we call like degradation of larger plastics. So those water bottles that I mentioned earlier, them breaking down over time through like UV radiation and physical abrasion. And those are the secondary sources for these plastics. And so I'm going to be sharing some impacts on microplastics, why we should care, some of the things we've been seeing in the freshwater and like what that implication could have for us. But I just want to preface that microplastics is a fairly new field beginning in about the early 2000s. With most of the research focusing on the marine sector. And so while that's an extremely important thing to be studying right now, freshwater ecosystems largely get overlooked. And so there's still so much we do not know when it comes to, like, microplastics impact in the freshwater sector. So that's kind of what I'm here for. I want to help bridge that gap of knowledge. And when it comes to, like, microplastic impacts on human health, right now we can only provide speculation at this point because we just don't have that much data at the time.
Okay, so what is exactly fresh water? When you say fresh water, what do you mean by that?
So fresh water, okay. I'm talking about like lakes, glaciers, reservoirs.
Okay.
I'm from Kansas, and the area that I live in that we get our fresh water, like our drinking water from, is from the Ogallala Aquifer. And yes, like I'm talking about like our resources. So like think about the water that comes through your faucet in your home or when you're out on a walk and you see a stream or a river, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Continue.
Yeah, of course. So there are about 5 different types of microplastics. There's foam, so like think about styrofoam, food containers, to-go coffee cups. This is what I was talking about is that secondary microplastic, so the things that break down over time through UV radiation. Another secondary microplastic is called fragments, and fragments are broken down pieces of larger plastic items. So these are the types of plastics you would see from the degradation of plastic bottles, lids, or single-use items over time. And when I'm talking about single-use items, I'm thinking of like when you order your favorite takeout or get a to-go meal from your favorite restaurant and they give you those plastic forks and knives and stuff, that's what I'm talking about with single-use plastic items.
Okay.
And so the last two categories of microplastics are microfibers. And so this one is really important, and this is the one that you're going to see on a daily basis. So microfibers have a huge impact on the environment, and they get into our environment through the simple act of washing our clothes. And so I will be giving more statistics on this later, but there was a 2016 study that was conducted where researchers found that about 700,000 fibers can be released from a 13-pound load of laundry. And it really just makes you think about what the mass of and, like, how much microfibers are in our environment through things just like washing our clothes, right? Because what is a simple mundane task is contributing a lot to microplastic accumulation in the environment. And I know that all sounds scary, but I promise, like, there are people that are working to solutions. So do not forget.
Well, that's interesting because we have been made aware of the danger of certain soaps to do our laundry, laundry detergents, but we were not aware of the danger of the laundry itself.
Right.
That's it. Okay.
And it can be overwhelming to think about.
Yes, it can. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you're okay. It's fine. You're good. The last type of microplastics are microbeads. So when I was saying that there was that early 2000s craze for, like, these little particles in your face scrubs, toothpaste, I'm pretty sure I remember, like, the Colgate toothpaste with microplastic or, like, microbeads. These were everywhere from your face wash to your hand soap to your hand sanitizer. And microbeads are non-biodegradable plastic particles that measure about 1 millimeter. So they're way smaller than a pea, and they're non-biodegradable. And biodegradable in the sense is just like it breaks down, like naturally breaks down. These do not naturally break down, which is very harmful for our environment and for our aquatic organisms.
Those in products to, like, because they don't break down, it's kind of like to get rid of, like they put fluoride as a waste product of aluminum in other products. Was that happening with the nanobeads or the microbeads? They were, because the microbeads wouldn't break down in and of itself, so they put it in something else, maybe recycle it, hoping that that would help it to break down?
That could be it. I know, like, a lot of microbeads and face washes and stuff at the time were meant to be, like, exfoliating. So they were supposed to help with, like, exfoliation and, like, softening your skin and things like that. But I know a lot of skincare companies are moving over to biodegradable ones that just naturally break down or completely emitting them. And I will talk about that later because some countries are banning microbeads from beauty care completely so that we aren't contributing anymore to our freshwater and marine systems. And the last type of microplastic, really quickly, they're called nurdles. I know it sounds completely fake, but this is the actual name of them. Nurdles are the type of primary microplastics. So these are the ones that are like resin pellets or like raw materials for plastic products. They're plastic pellets that are typically made by manufacturers that can end up in our ecosystems by slipping out of transport vehicles or from factory runoff. And so think of them like little plastics that manufacturers melt down to make bigger plastics. And so those are the basic types of microplastics. I know this is a lot of information coming at y'all, and I kind of want to briefly talk about how microplastics can end up into our systems because it's important to think about how these things get in our systems and start kind of formulating what can we do to combat it and, or like, what little changes can we make in our everyday life. So, like, as I kind of touched on as I briefly touched on before, there's a host of ways that microplastics can get into our ecosystems, be it through the mundane task of washing our clothes, to run off from factories, or slipping through filters of sewage treatment plants. It can give us, like, an idea. We can start to, like, picture in our head how these things get into our system. And so, like I just mentioned, microplastics can get into our waters by slipping through wastewater treatment plants. We can think about this like as with factory spills, kind of like oil spills, they can slip through. And while wastewater treatment plants are getting more advanced in trying to catch microplastics, sometimes they're just too small, like the microbeads, which are about 1 millimeter, and they just so happen to slip through. A 2017 scientific study found that a huge contributor to microplastics in the terrestrial or land environment was through sewage sludge containing synthetic fibers and sediment microplastics from personal care items. And so through that and because of that, a lot of countries have been working to ban microplastics completely. And so I've mentioned several times that larger plastics can be degraded through UV radiation. And UV radiation is very, very harsh, can contribute to the degradation of larger plastics, and those can end up in our ecosystems as well and end up into the food web of aquatic organisms. So that's kind of like what gets into what I study. It's important to look, when it comes to understanding microplastics, it's important that we look at how aquatic organisms are handling this, right? So it's important for us to study how, like, marine mammals, like whales, seals, but also, like, freshwater fish, freshwater zooplankton, how they're handling and what effects microplastics have on them so we can better understand maybe how it can affect us, but also just the sheer impact that this has on the environment.
I'm going to have to play some music right now so we could process this information. That is going to be a very quick music break. And then you come back and blow our mind some more.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back. This is Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night program. We are talking to Sister Leonon Nembe about microplastics, their effect on the environment, and why we should care. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone to make a comment or to ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on the Dare to Win button. Then click on Listen Live. Before the break, Sister Leonon was talking to us about microplastics, the various types of microplastics. Sister Leonon, please continue with your conversation.
All right. Thank you. So remember that number I gave earlier stating that about 700,000 microfibers can be released from a 13-pound load of laundry? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go a little bit more in depth with that by looking at this 2016 study that came out of England. So there is a 2016 study that was done that identified that washing clothes made from synthetic fibers was a potentially important source of microfibers in the environment. So it found that about 700,000 fibers could be released from an average 13-pound load of laundry. And then it broke it down with, like, acrylic being 728,000, polyester being 496,000, and polyester cotton being 137,000. And all those numbers together, I know it may be a bit confusing, but, like, all those numbers together make up the bigger 700,000 fibers. And they found that a single garment could produce about 1,900 fibers per wash, which is really wild when you think about it, that one single piece of clothing could contribute 1,900 fibers to the environment. And so, yeah, so that was that study. And it's kind of, it's really intimidating when you think about it, but there are ways and people are working towards solutions to combat this. So I want to talk a little bit about...
You have a question. Somebody wants to talk to you, okay?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Caller with the last 4 digits, 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, and ask your question or state your comment. Thank you.
Yes, good evening, Sister Q, and to your guests. This is Brother Shibaka. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland, and I'm...
Peace, Brother Shibaka.
Yeah, I'm highly fascinated. In fact, I believe since I was going to ask you the question dealing with the microfibers in your wash, and you had just begun to talk about that when I called. So I would appreciate if you could go on, and elaborate a little bit more, particularly how it gets into the environment from your wash. I know it goes through waste and stuff like that. So if you could elaborate on that, I would be most appreciated. Thanks a lot, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Shibaka.
Thank you so much for your question. So, yeah, it can be really intimidating dealing with a number like 700,000 fibers getting into our wash. And so the way that a lot of these fibers are getting into our system is through, like, sewage treatment plants and through runoff. So, like, if you have runoff from your house, like, say there's, like, something floods or something's leaking, it can get through that way. But the biggest culprit is these sewage treatment plants, and they're working right now. One of the main solutions that I was going to touch on later, but I can definitely bring it up right now, is that sewage treatment plants are trying to advance their wastewater treatment technologies. And so studies are currently being done to remedy this, because while we are at an advanced stage of, like, wastewater treatment, it's just these fibers are so small, and it's so easy for them to, like, just slip through processes that we have in place. And so one of the big things with, like, wastewater treatment, and think about this, like, with anything, right, that's coming out of our, like, houses, our drains and things like that, is So we're trying to reduce microplastics in effluent. And effluent is defined as an outflowing of water or gas to a natural body of water from a structure such as a treatment plant, sewer pipe, or industrial outfall. So a lot of it is like sewage system drains, things like that. And it's hard to manage now because, again, microfibers are just so small and so easy for them to slip through. But people are working on studies and trying to advance the technology to crack down on that. So thank you for asking your question. I have to do more research into the ways in which wastewater treatment plants are trying to do that because I'm really interested in that myself. But thank you for asking. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a very good question because, you know, like I said earlier, most of us don't even really think about microplastics as a problem or a serious problem, and we don't recognize our contribution to the problem because, you know, we do all these little different things like organic soaps and this, that, and third, but we don't think about just washing our clothes is causing a problem.
Right.
You know, and we, it's just, it's really mind-boggling to think of how many traps there are where we're not even aware of. And I think that's the importance of the light that you're shining tonight to help us see what we're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
I briefly wanted to touch on some impacts that we're seeing on aquatic organisms. So I'm currently doing research on microplastics myself. I study where they're located in aquatic organisms. I'm looking at where they're lodged in their GI tracts, upper GI versus lower GI. I have also been looking at trophic transfer, and this trophic transfer is related to food webs. And so think of it as if, like, I'm using Daphnia magna, which is a type of zooplankton, and then using ghost shrimp. So think of trophic transfer as the shrimp eats the zooplankton. Does the plastic from the zooplankton transfer into the shrimp? Which the answer to that from what we've been seeing is yes. And, like, we can kind of use that to speculate what that means for, like, the food that we consume. And so we've been seeing a lot of trophic transfer between different organisms and food webs. From what I've been looking at and what I've been studying, we've been seeing that a lot of microplastics are getting lodged in the upper GI tracts of these Daphnia magna, which is a type of zooplankton. And based on other studies, this can lead to blockages. Like, these blockages can lead to the organism suffocating. And that's really important to note, and it's really important that we study these things. Another thing with microplastics and why they're so harmful is that bacteria and harmful pollutants can get easily stuck to the microplastics. So when organisms ingest the microplastics, it's easier for them to absorb and get harmful toxins into their systems. And so, like, this is by no means an expansive list of all the ways in which microplastics have been seen to affect freshwater organisms, but these are some things that we have seen and I think are important to bring up. So obvious is mortality. We've also saw that it reduced their feeding rates and their body mass. We also saw a reduced allocation of energy for growth, so they're growing a lot slower than they normally would. Decreased predatory performance, which means they are not, some of these organisms are predators. They're not preying on food the way that they should be. There's just a reduction overall in biological, like, performances. And we've also seen changes in their behavioral responses, such as reduced swimming. And so, and
swimming?
The last one being, like, intestinal damage.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's something else. The fish that we eat quite possibly have microplastics within them that we don't eat. And so we have no clue what that damage might be to people eating these various fish. And even would it be in you know, like people eat seaweeds and planktons and stuff like that, would it be absorbed into them, you think? Since they're so small, would they be absorbed in with the water?
So there's kind of hard to speculate with how the effects are on human health. Like, we definitely we do ingest microplastics. Like, it is important to note we do ingest microplastics. However, like, our stomach acids and stuff are a little bit stronger than those of aquatic organisms, so we're able to break it down more. Doesn't necessarily mean that's a good thing for us, but we are able to break it down more, which isn't why we don't see them getting lodged in our GI tract the way that they're getting lodged in small aquatic organisms or larger aquatic organisms. And I've talked a lot about freshwater because that's the field of science that I'm in, but to show you what it's looking like in our ocean so we can get a big picture is a 2015 study was done that showed about 8 million tons of plastic enter our oceans each year, which is kind of hard for me to even wrap my head around, like visualizing what 8 million tons would be like. But the study suggested that a bulk of these plastics are microplastics that are either suspended, just floating freely in the ocean, or buried into the sediment or sand that's in the ocean. And so this poses a great risk to marine biodiversity. And biodiversity is just all the different, like, flora and fauna that make up our ecosystems or the marine ecosystems, like your coral reefs, your whales, your sharks, your little Finding Nemo fish, clownfish, all of those things contribute to the biodiversity of these ecosystems. And throwing off biodiversity is actually really, really bad. As much as we may not think about it, each clownfish, sea anemone, coral is very, very important to the ecosystem. And having functioning ecosystems like freshwater ecosystems and marine ecosystems also contribute to our health. So, like, oceans, there's these things called, like, oceanic sinks that when the salinity or the temperature of the oceans change could have an effect on land. So while we may think that, like, the ocean is the ocean and the land is land, effects and changes in the oceans do have effects and changes on the land. So it's really important that we study these things and work towards solutions. And another thing is microplastics can be considered xenobiotics, and xenobiotics are either naturally occurring or synthetic compounds that can interfere with the function of endocrine systems, causing unnatural responses. So what we've seen in marine organisms is that, first, let me backtrack. Like, with the endocrine function, that is a system that regulates tissue function, metabolism, growth, and hormones, to name a few. And so microplastics can be extremely dangerous to these marine organisms as they do not possess the specific enzymes to break down synthetic polymers, which is why we're seeing them get lodged in, like, upper GI tracts as a whole, versus with humans, we have stronger acids and can, like, break them down. Introduction of microplastics into a community can also alter their behavior and habits of a population structure. And so it's just, there's a lot of studies that's being done. Again, like, a lot of it's been focused on aquatic organisms, but I can kind of try to provide some speculations on human health. So I just want to preface this again. As I mentioned in the beginning of my presentation, the impact of microplastics on human health is relatively unknown at this moment. We just don't know. It's a very new field, and we just don't have the data to say, like, what specific result it has on us. However, we are beginning to find microplastics in our food sources and our water. So the World Health Organization found that in our drinking water, fragments and fibers, which I mentioned in the very beginning, were the predominant particles that were found in our drinking waters. And so if you want, like, technical terms, these are polyethylene and polypropylene plastics. So, like, PP plastics, if you've ever heard that in the news, are, like, PE plastics is what they are. We've also begun to have found microplastics in our seafood, such as fish and shellfish, and we're even finding it in our sea salt. And so, like I mentioned, with freshwater and marine organisms, microplastics are substrates for harmful toxins and bacteria. So pollutants and additives can be transferred from ingested plastics into our bodies. So don't know the effects of that yet, but that's kind of like what we're speculating based on what we've seen with aquatic organisms. So what this can mean is that there could be a spread of pathogens that are attached to microplastics. So we could see an increased global risk of human and animal diseases. But right now, the survival of pathogens on plastic debris has not extensively been studied, and it is still unknown to what extent microplastics play in the role of the spread of infectious diseases. Another thing we've been seeing is microplastic rain. So our normal
microplastic rain.
Microplastic. Yeah, I know. It sounds completely wild. I was even like Chip when I was learning about this, but yeah, we've been starting to see microplastic rain. And so a 2020 study was done that estimated about 1,000 tons or the equivalent of 123 million plastic water bottles, if you can visualize that, rained down on protected areas in the western U.S. each year. And it's important to note this study was done in the western U.S., but still, if you just think about 123 million plastic water bottles just, like, raining down on the western part of the U.S., that is very wild to think about. But this is just how much plastics are ingrained in our systems. And, like, finally, one of the last things we've been seeing is that microplastics are now starting to show up in human placentas. This was in a study that was done earlier this year that found that. We don't know exactly what the impacts of that are, but we are starting to see it show up in things like our placentas, which is very wild. So,
yeah. Wow.
And then, yeah.
It's mind-boggling. I don't see anybody with any questions, any more questions right now. So give us some ideas of what we can do to kind of, or what is being done to minimize the situation.
Yeah. So I know this was a lot of information to take in, and I appreciate all of y'all that are listening that have stuck through this entire talk. And I know it can be overwhelming to learn all this, and your mind may be swimming with questions about what we can do. But, you know, rest assured, people are actively working on solutions on how we can begin to make a difference. So I want to first talk about the banning of microplastics in countries such as the U.S., U.K., and Canada. So the Microbead Free Waters Act of 2015 was passed. This act prohibits the manufacturing, packaging, and distribution of microbeads in cosmetics as well as non-prescription over-the-counter such as toothpaste. And if you remember, there are definitely microplastics in toothpaste in the early, like, 2000s. This is a great getting these non-biodegradable or naturally breaking down plastics not out of the environment, but so that we're not contributing more to the environment. Like, we still have to work on getting what we have out of the environment, but we're not adding to that, which is a good first step. Another thing has been sustainable fashion. So I want to make a note that while this option is not necessarily obtainable to everyone, due to the high prices of eco-friendly fabrics. Sustainable fashion is a movement towards minimizing fashion footprint on the environment through working towards reducing textile waste, reducing chemical use in clothing, and combating the fast fashion industry. And the fast fashion industry does contribute a lot to microfiber waste in our ecosystems. But sustainable fashion isn't necessarily accessible to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
With like shirts, like a single shirt going for like $100 and $150, right? So it's not necessarily attainable to everybody. And while it does seem scary, and like a lot of it is like, oh, what can the person do? A lot of the weight to help with microplastics or help reduce the waste is on corporations. Like, it should be on corporations, our governments, to really put in regulations and to also start the use of, like, regulating microfibers, microplastic waste. Like, they will try, like, corporations and stuff will try to put all the pressure on the consumer, but one person can only do so much, and it's really on the corporations more to be the change. Little things we can do are like reducing single-use items. And so if y'all remember that plastic straw ban that popped up over the past several years, it was an effort to reduce single-use straws in the environment, which in turn led to a surge in reusable straws. But we have to be careful on how we navigate these things because it's not accessible to everybody. So like a lot of the pushback at the time was because this wasn't accessible to the disabled community, because some people need the flexibility and stuff of the single-use plastic or the single-use straws because of limitations and things. And so when we're thinking about solutions and we're going about these solutions, we need to remember to be equitable and to keep things accessible, because sustainable fashion is a great thing. It's not accessible to everybody. The plastic straw ban was a good step in the like right direction, but it's not accessible to everybody. And so we have to think, like, is this good for the environment if we are isolating other groups and alienating other groups? And like, no. So we have to think about how we can be accessible in all of our solutions. And then the last thing, which is what I mentioned, which was the advanced wastewater treatment technologies. And so with microplastics being so tiny in nature, it's quite easy for them to slip through wastewater treatment plants. But however, like, studies are being done on how to remedy this. And so those are kind of like solutions that are happening right now. But you can do simple things like, instead of buying a case of plastic water bottles, get a reusable water bottle. Like, say you bought yourself takeout, instead of getting their single-use silverware, either use, if you have some at home, use them at home, or get yourself, like, a set of reusable, like, to-go, like, carry-with-you reusable cutlery to reduce plastic use. There's little things that we can do to help. And I know it's scary and I know it's overwhelming, but there are little things we can do, and the little things do make an impact. And
for sure,
to kind of tie it into the overall message of this program and how we can lift each other up in order to be able to fight for each other and fight for ourselves and fight for our equity, we have to have a planet to live on. And like, we are not the most important things on this planet. The ecosystem is equally as important, and it's important to coexist with our ecosystem, because we can't fight for anything if we don't have a planet to fight on. So it's important to keep these in mind, be conscious about how we're using plastics, our own personal footprints, but it's okay. Like, you don't have to make the most dramatic change. You don't have to change overnight. You don't have to do anything big or grand. Like, just little simple things, like you went to Starbucks, they don't have straws anymore. Okay, good. Like, you recycled your water bottle, that's great. Like, you recycled a corrupt box, like, good job. Like, just little things. Like, it doesn't have to be intimidating, and we can do this if we all work together and if we all do, like, little small things, like, it'll be, we'll start heading in the right direction.
Okay. We're going to take another quick music break, and then I think we have a question or two, and we'll wrap this up. Thank you.
Of course.
No idea what was happening to me. All my life things were cool till now. Then the feeling, the strangest feeling came over me. My happiness just came with such surprise. The water just swelled up in my eyes. All I could see was your candid face, jumping up and down all around the place.
It was love. It was love.
It was love. It was love. It was love. It was love. From just romancing in the world and dancing with you, girl, I knew it's something to discover. We'd soon discover. My happiness just came with such surprise. The water just swelled up in my eyes. All I could see was your candid face.
Welcome back to Dare to Win. We have a question, so I'm going to take that question or comment, and we'll continue with the program with the with Sister Rianon. Caller with the last four digits 3176. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and ask your question or make your comment. Thank you.
Greetings to you, Sister Q, and your guest. This is Brother Unti. I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia, and I want to thank you for a really, really informative program. And I need to get some clarity. If I understood what was being said correctly, not only is there a problem of this single-use plastic turning up in our oceans and waterways, but that it is also breaking down into microplastic fibers that's being ingested by sea life, and so we in turn when we're purchasing seafood to eat, we are ingesting it, and that's winding up in human placentas and other body parts, et cetera. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah. So a lot of, like, so big water bottles, big plastic items, they do degrade over time. So a lot of the single-use plastic items will degrade over time either through physical abrasion or through UV radiation, because if you remember, UV radiation is very harsh, and it does break it down over time. And in turn, those end up in our aquatic ecosystems and into aquatic organisms. And then so what the term is called trophic transfer. So when one organism eats another, and the waste or like the plastics go from one to another. So that's trophic transfer. And so, yeah, microplastics are tropically transferring to us through our food. So as far as seafood and things, it's been seen in fish, shellfish, and it's even getting into things like sea salt. So you did
getting
understand
into what,
that.
What's the last thing you said?
Salt. It's even been found
it's getting
in
into
sea
salt?
Yeah, yeah. It's getting into sea salt, too. We don't know what the effects are on human health just yet, but we can right now there's been, like, speculations that it could microplastics could spread pollutants and additives when we ingest them. But the reason they're not getting lodged in our systems the way that they are with aquatic organisms is because our acids and enzymes may be a little bit stronger with breaking those down, or we're able to pass them more than what aquatic organisms are, because it's been found that, like, macroplastics are clogging the gills and stuff of, like, mussels or, like, oysters and things like that, which is suffocating them. So it's a little bit different systems that, like, between humans and aquatic organisms. But, yes, you are absolutely right. There is trophic transfer from our food sources to us through the degradation of larger plastic items.
Okay. And my last point of clarity for myself is I was in a restaurant in Atlanta last week, Slutty Vegan, and I noticed that they were using paper bags for takeout. So one of the things that we can do through our community organizations is to ask the retailers where we shop to make the transition to paper bags. Now, what's interesting is we transitioned from paper to plastic to save the trees. Now it looks like the plastic is more detrimental than the paper. So what is the recommendation that's being made at this point?
Honestly, that's all really complex and, like, kind of outside of what I'm studying, so I'm not necessarily sure. But I have been seeing that people are switching to, like, some people switch to reusable bags or are looking into recycled materials. I've seen a lot of, like, paper bags that are recycled paper bags, so bags made out of paper that was, like, thrown away or something, or recycled so that another tree doesn't have to be cut down. But it's all really complex. Think about it, and it's hard to just, like, change these systems overnight, from switching from, like, paper to plastic, but now back to paper. And so it can be really confusing. So
I think that also has to do with the outlawing of hemp, because hemp would make you a bag that could last forever or almost, you know. So
yeah, but it's something obviously we need to think about and begin to advocate on. So thank you, sister. I really appreciate your research and your taking the time to share with us this evening. And thank you, sister.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Anki. So, Sister Rhiannon, what is the most important thing you think that our family can take away from tonight's discussion?
Hopefully y'all have learned a lot about microplastics and taken away a sense of, like, a greater appreciation for our environment and what that means, and how we just, I guess, as big as a footprint that we have on our environment and how we can reduce it. Because, again, like, it's important, and with the overall us lifting us message that, you know, we're fighting for ourselves, we're fighting for the equity for ourselves, but we have to have a planet to fight on. And so I think the biggest takeaway is, like, we have to remember that if we are going to seek equity for ourselves, we have to have something here to be on, because if we get that equity and but we don't have a planet to be on, what was it for? And so just having a greater, like, we just have a greater appreciation, like, we also have to, we take care of ourselves, but we also have to take care of our environment too. because our environment can take care of us. And so,
yes.
And think about the effects when in the freshwater systems, because we need our fresh water to survive. Therefore, we need to take care of our freshwater systems.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm going to ask Brother Thurman to come on and kind of connect the Uru program to this microplastic situation that we got going on here. Brother Thurman, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I am, like everyone else, highly appreciative for the information that's been given, and we need to have two or three more callers for the sisters to continue on to feed us the knowledge that we really need to know. It's a very vital subject, and we thank you for the work that you're doing and ongoing doing your determination to achieve as you have. And us lifting us is about us taking control of the economics of our communities. And in that taking control, we need to be mindful that we cannot afford to let there be a continuous drain of the economics that we need in order to take our rightful place, return back to our rightful place. And we've got to be mindful of minimizing that the outflow of the monies and the pollution of the planet, including the plastic, contributes to further ills to all of life. And as the sister said, if we don't have a planet to live on, we got a major problem. And so now more than ever, we need each other, and we need to be pooling resources, including money. And Us Lifting Us is about us pooling our intellectual as well as our financial resources to build the institutions and the businesses that we need all over this planet that can be used very useful. One of the things that is a major effort of Us Lifting Us is to open up Us Lifting Us marketplaces all over the planet, and that would be one of the places that would have an educational / movie theater complex that we could have Sister Rihanna come back and, speak for 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday or Sunday and to just take us further as she grows in that knowledge. And so Us Lifting Us is essential for our people. Our people have never been treated totally fairly in the healthcare systems, and so we need our own research. And Sister Rihanna is doing research and bringing it to us. And we've got to join in with this cooperative economics program, because that is our original economic model, and the capitalism has never been fair and righteous to us or the planet, as she talked about. Because there's a lot of motivation behind that capitalism, that's driven by capitalism, that helped to pollute the planet, such as Monsanto. And we could go on and on, and be wonderful if we had another hour. And once again, Sister Rihanna, thank you so much for what you're doing and what you continue to do and continue to achieve and teach the people so that we'll have a planet to live on.
Thank you. I've appreciated being on here. Thank you all for asking me to present. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. And we want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. We'll be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock for another installment of Dare to Win. We're going to have this sister back, too. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. Thank you, everyone. Peace.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Black man born free. At least that's the way it's supposed to be. Chains that bind him are hard to see. Unless you take this walk with me. Place where he lives, got plenty of names. Slums, ghetto, and black belt, they are one and the same. And I call it
kind of job is hard to find. That means an increase in the welfare line. Crime rate is rising too. If you were hungry, what would you do? Rent is 2 months past due, and a building is falling apart. Little boy needs a pair of shoes, and this is only a part of. Some of the brothers got plenty of cash. Tricks on the corner, gonna see to that. Some like to smoke and some like to blow. Some are even strung out on a $50 Jones. Some are trying to ditch reality by getting so high, only to find out you can never touch the sky, 'cause your roots are in, oh yeah. Every Sunday morning, I can hear